Okay, as Heather mentioned, my name is Michelle Miller. I'm from Quinnipiac University. Out of curiosity, does anybody out there know of Quinnipiac University? Couple people, okay. Maybe we have some college hockey fans then, because that's one thing at least we do well. I'm going to be talking with you today, really focusing on what the European Union is doing with health impact assessment. When I first heard of health impact assessment, I had been living in Germany for about 5 years, practicing intellectual property law of all things, and I remember to this day thinking, what a great idea. I think this just sounds like a wonderful thing. It was in the context of the EU's push to try to ban smoking in restaurants. They basically came at it from the approach that it was very bad for the restaurant workers. And they made public a health impact assessment to support their position. And I just remember thinking it was a wonderful idea and wondering what we were doing in the United States about health impact assessment. When I came back to the U.S. in 2011, I began to read up on health impact assessment and realized we were doing quite a lot, as it turns out. However, we have no mandate for health in all policies as they do in the EU. We have no mandate for health impact assessment at the federal level. So what I'd like to look at today is what's going on in the EU, what might we learn from what their experience has been over the last decade or so. You will notice I am skipping over an extremely important issue, which is, should health impact assessment even be institutionalized? Does it really need to be? As to that, I will just say that I agree with the National Academy of Sciences report on health impact assessment when they argue that it is the only way, a legal mandate for health impact assessment is the only way to ensure that all populations in the United States benefit, that we don't have a situation where only those with political clout or wealth end up being able to demand health impact assessment for laws that interest them and poor populations are not able to do so. So assuming, as I do, that we are moving toward an implementation for health in all policies, I'm an inveterate optimist, what can I say? I'd like to look then at the EU. I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going, first of all, because I'm not sure what you know about the way the EU works as far as lawmaking, I'm going to give you a two-minute primer. Now, this could be a whole semester class, so we're going to do this really fast. Law in the European Union comes in the form of primary law. Our primary law, as you know, is the Constitution of the United States. There is no constitution in the European Union. They attempted a couple of years back to create a constitution, and unfortunately, referendums in France and the Netherlands really slowed that process down. So there is no constitution. They do have, of course, secondary law statutes as well. So as far as their primary law, after the last reform effort in Lisbon in 2008, the primary law of the EU is now divided into two treaties. Originally in 1957, you had the Treaty of Rome. This is now divided into the Treaty on European Union and the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union. As far as the statutes go, the secondary law, there are several forms, but the most important ones are directives and regulations. Regulations are what you might consider self-executing treaties. Basically, regulations become law in each member state of the EU automatically, and each citizen of the EU may go into court with them and rely on them as the law. Directives are different. They're not self-executing. Each member state must put the content of the directive into their own national law, however they do so. So this is the basic system of the laws. And as far as making these directives and regulations, proposals come almost exclusively from the EU Commission. I don't know if you know anything about the bodies of the European Union, but the EU Commission, you can almost think of it as a bit of an executive branch. You can't make the exact one-on-one comparison because the EU is quasi-governmental. It's not exactly the same as a national government. But the Commission consists of 36 directorates general, and these directorates general each have their own subject matter areas. So, for example, there's a directorate general for transportation, there's a directorate general for competition, there's a directorate general for health and consumer protection. These directorates general propose directives and regulations. They propose them to the Council of the EU and to the European Parliament. And in the ordinary legislative process, the Council of the EU and the European Parliament have co-decision powers. They amend the proposals of the commission, and then they vote on them, decide whether or not to pass them as directives and regulations. So that's your two-minute primer. Now we're going to look at how in the world health impact assessment became part of a mandate in the EU. In 1997, the member states of the EU, at that time it was just 15, the member states of the EU met in Amsterdam. As they do periodically, they created a new treaty, which became consolidated into those two treaties I mentioned before, the primary law of the EU. And basically then, the health and all policies mandate became Article 168 of the TFEU. A high level of human health protection shall be ensured in the definition and implementation of all union policies and activities. That's quite the mandate. But that is what is called for now in the primary law of the EU. So how to put that into action? Well, as so often happens in the EU, the Commission is responsible for enforcing these treaties. And so it was the Commission that needed to do something about this health and all policies mandate. But the Commission wasn't fast enough for the Council. This is not that unusual. So, November 18, 1999, the Council came up with a resolution, emphasizes that the TFEU requires HIAP, hint, hint, Commission, considers that a high-level political commitment will be needed to fulfill this requirement, no question there. And please forgive the typo, you can tell that I teach a lot. Nobody's taking notes. But the Commission did take note of the promising work being done on health impact assessment, another huge sort of board over the Commission's head, and reaffirms its earlier invitation to the Commission to develop a methodology for assessing the effect of union policies on health. So basically here you have the Council asking the Commission very politely to get to work and to come up with some sort of implementation for health and all policies. And that is what the Commission very quickly did. The Gothenburg Consensus Paper came out in 1999. It basically came up with a definition of health impact assessment, one that we use in the United States, as a matter of fact, and came up with a sort of common understanding of what health impact assessment methodology would look like. The Commission funded a three-year study, at the end of which they now have a health impact assessment guide, quite a detailed guide for the methodology, how health impact assessment is to be implemented. So how do they do this? I'm not going to look at methodology. I want to look at the process. How does it work in the EU as far as actually using health impact assessment to try to inform legislative proposals? Impact assessment is required in the EU for all items in the Commission's legislative and work program, which may have a potential economic, social, and/or environmental impact. In other words, for a lot of laws. The Directorate General, remember that's part of the Commission, I said there were 36 of them in the Commission. They're responsible for the proposal, that are responsible for the proposal. They carry out the health impact assessment, and they may include other directorates general if there are cross-cutting issues. So, for example, the Directorate General for Transportation comes up with a law, and I think it might have a health impact. They will ask the Directorate General for Health and Consumer Protection to help out. So they form an inter-service group, and the inter-service group will then look at the different possibilities like health or transportation, whatever the issue is. Then, after the health impact assessment is finished, it will go to the Impact Assessment Board for quality control. Does it meet minimum standards? If it does, it will be adopted by the Commission. And then, importantly, it is only then that they are supposed to finalize their legislative proposal. So the Commission is supposed to have all of their legislative proposals informed by the impact assessment process. Once they are finished with that process, with actually drafting the proposal, partially looking at least what the health impact assessment indicated, they will then send the health impact assessment with all legislative proposals to the European Parliament and the Council as a supportive working document. So you get the idea that the members of Parliament They receive a legislative proposal from the commission, and along with it, they have the health impact assessment report, so they can see. Thank you. So they can see how the commission came to the conclusions they did as far as what impacts this legislative proposal would have on the population's health. The commission decided a few years after implementing this that they needed an independent evaluation of how well it was working. So they asked the Evaluation Partnership Limited, a nonprofit organization, to do the evaluation. Now, this was only 3 years after health impact assessment had really been implemented systemically. So this is very early in the process, but they wanted to look at what was going on, and they found out some interesting things. 13 of 20 impact assessments had some impact on commission proposals. 7 out of 20 didn't. The impact assessments were started too late in the process and not given enough time. This one I think is extremely important for us, as I hope I'm going to have time to explain that. Commission cabinet members, members of parliament, and council members were very skeptical of the objectivity of health impact assessments. They felt that too many times the commission just used them as a rubber stamp for the proposals they wanted to come up with. Members of parliament and council members often didn't understand the health impact assessments. Stakeholders were very happy that they had an opportunity to be heard, but they weren't sure that their ideas were really being considered. And one good thing, the inter-service groups did work very well to provide extra information to the Directorate General leading the impact assessment process. So how can we increase the perception of objectivity? That's the one I think is really important for us. As you all are very aware, we have an extremely polarized political system in this country. HIA is not going to work for us unless our lawmakers believe it to be objective, perceive it to be objective. First of all, we've got to make them prospective. We have to do them before you come up with a proposal. They have to be used, this is related, to shape the legislative proposal. Stakeholder insights need to be given serious consideration. Assessors have to be well-trained, and they have to follow standard guidelines. Reports have got to be made accessible to lawmakers. They must understand them, okay? We have to use plain language as much as possible, and they should be clearly organized. And finally, I think this, for our system, is very important. I would argue that we definitely need them to be carried out by an independent, nonpartisan organization. Now, who that's going to be is the difficult part. Executive agencies, this has been suggested, like DHHS, not exactly nonpartisan independent. Universities. Well, I like that idea, but a lot of lawmakers do not think of universities as without an agenda, let's say. Dedicated nonprofit companies like Change Lab Solutions. That might be a possibility. Again, you have the question for some lawmakers of agenda. The Institute of Medicine. You know, Senator Harkins has once again, with Senate Bill 39, his Help America Act, suggested health and all policies, a mandate for it, and also that health impact assessment be used. He suggests that for legislative acts, that the IOM should be the one to do health impact assessment. Given their mission to protect health in the United States, this might be a good group to do it. I would suggest we should consider the U.S. Government Accountability Office as well. These are the watchdogs. They are there to make sure that our tax dollars are going to where they're supposed to be going. They're there to help give policy suggestions to Congress and also to evaluate various options with policy directions. Obviously, competencies would have to be built up in GAO to be able to do health impact assessment, but I think they might possibly be considered by all to be objective. And if objectivity is what we're going for, I think this is a possibility for us. So that just leaves me with thanking you for your attention. That's just my daughter playing Doc McStuffins, but maybe another public health worker in the future. Thank you.